Greetings, nerds. Welcome to Gem Hunt. We are recording on January 20th, 2025. This is an important day for all the movie people out there because it is David Lynch's birthday. And David left us in this plane of existence a mere 5 days ago. We, along with many others, are still distraught over the passing of Mr. Lynch, so we felt it would be appropriate to open this episode with a small acknowledgement of David's life and work. My name is Cody, and they say that love makes the world go round, makes people who need people the luckiest people in the world, although they never said a doggone thing about a cure for hearing loss.
I'm Beth, and I am alive and full of light, and the light is mine to share.
Nice. I'm Buggy. I'm back. And I'm going to take this moment really quickly to shout out my baddies, Raina, Hannah, and also Cody. Cody friend, not Cody dad. Just wanted to say that really quick because they asked me to. Love y'all.
Hell yeah. Nice shout out. So, thinking of David Lynch here tonight, does anyone have any thoughts or feelings they want to share off the top or from your hearts?
Off the dome. Well, fix your hearts or die. Also, my favorite maybe thing I've read, I mean, you know, everyone in this house has been a huge fan for, you know, their lives from adolescence onward, I feel like, right? I don't think that's inaccurate. I read that thing that everybody else read this weekend about, you know, tonight I'm going to find out if I'm connected to the moon. And then 3 days later, he's like, I'm connected to the moon. I don't know. There's an earnestness, a genuineness. I think those of us who are from the Northwest, not that everyone else can't claim ownership too, but there's a certain, he's a Spokane boy. I represent Everett. You know, yeah, I think.
That's the Palmer House.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's not just Twin Peaks though. It's something about how to live your life, how to be a human, how to treat women as a male director and, you know, as a male human, how to treat female humans or other gendered humans. There's just something
Nailed
about
it.
That guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's like got, he's a special Pacific Northwest treasure right there. A little gem.
Is that all you have to say?
I mean, are we talking about like movies or just like
yeah, whatever.
Overall?
Whatever your feelings and heart want to convey.
Let her rip.
I mean, I was sad about Kyle's post about David Lynch. That was really sweet. And I like reposted that because I was like, oh, my two Shaylas, love them so much.
He doesn't have the language to express.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those ones like Bowie or Leonard Cohen where it's like.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching Twin Peaks this whole weekend. I like started it over because I realized I don't remember literally anything about the show. Actually, I like forgot. There's a lot going on
mm-hmm.
the whole time. Too, the whole time, but that's what I've been doing to honor his memory.
Heck yeah. We watched Mulholland Drive this weekend. Always fun. I stand by my theory that Mulholland Drive is an extension of the Twin Peaks universe. Not that all of David Lynch's movies don't exist in a special David Lynch universe, but I really think that if you watch the original Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, Mulholland Drive, and then Twin Peaks The Returned, Mulholland Drive just seems to fit this perfect gap in between the original series and Fire Walk With Me and then the new series. Just feels like an extension. And also knowing that it was supposed to be a spinoff of Twin Peaks and Audrey Horne was going to be going to LA just makes me think that there has to be a connection.
And I noticed I don't know how many times I've watched the movie, maybe six, something like that. Like all of his movies, every time I watch it, there's a new piece. And like this time I was like, oh, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's one of Naomi Watts's names. I'm like, oh, okay. Interesting. Because Diane has a gap too, where it's like, where Diane? Well, we know things happen to her. So
yeah,
it's interesting.
For sure. And as you mentioned, Northwest connection is someone who was born and raised in a small logging community in the state of Washington. I've always felt that Twin Peaks perfectly captured the glory and the weirdness and the wonder of this place that we call home. And David Lynch really introduced me to the idea that below the surface, there's some like very strange and bewildering and nefarious shit going on. However, there's plenty of beauty and love available to see us through to another day. And obviously we could sit here and do a whole episode about David Lynch, but we're not going to do that. We'll leave that to all the other podcasters and jerk-offs.
Yeah, jabronis.
But it also happens to be Martin Luther King Jr. Day today. It's a very important holiday, and we just received word from the government that we're not allowed to talk about Martin Luther King Jr. anymore because that's woke shit. You know, go woke, go broke, you know what I'm saying?
We're not going to talk about the other thing. We also want to send love to all our friends in LA because that's some bullshit too. Because it appears that climate change is real.
Nope. Do coke make jokes?
Nope.
Al Roke egg yolks. I'm freestyling rapping.
That was fire. Yeah.
Poke my toke. That's a hat with a Q-U-E.
We are also celebrating the return of Jem Hunt's prodigal son, Buggy, who is safely home from her crusade to conquer Peru. You want to share anything about your travels? Where are your mystery seeds?
Oh, no.
I lost these seeds that we brought back for my best friend Hannah's mom, and I'm trying to find them because if I don't, she's going to kill us both.
Oh, no.
But overall, the trip was amazing. Like, I can't really, like, so much happened that also I can't even, like, think of one thing. Like, it all is just one big blur. But this time I got to, like, visit more museums and learn a bit more than I did last time because I feel like I was, like, 18 and I was like, there are clubs and I'm going to go to all of the clubs. And I did go clubbing a little bit less, maybe. I feel like I'm already getting old. I'm tired of it all. I broke a heel one time when I was out. That was pretty sick. And yeah, I had a great time. Can't wait to go back. Met a lot of cool people there. And yeah, it was a fabulous trip.
Nice. Welcome back.
Thank you.
To the greatest country in the fucking world. Just kidding.
We got the gang back together tonight. Should we talk about Nosferatu or does anyone give a shit? We all saw it.
Looked pretty.
It was beautiful. I think, weirdly, the verdict among everyone we know who loves movies and went to see it is that we all like Bram Stoker's Dracula better.
The fear in her voice saying that movie's fire. It's the best vampire movie.
Oh no, but it's the same. Okay, you at least said it's the same movie.
Well, it's supposed.
I mean, it's
to
the
be.
Same
well,
story. I mean,
it's
slapped
it's Dracula.
Oh,
that's it. There's only so much you can do with that story if you're following it like by the book.
Yeah, and I just think there's a level of fun in the Coppola one that there was not. It was beautiful, and Buggy,
awesome.
Like, thought about it, I feel like, more.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I haven't seen the original, like, German silent film it's based off of, and I don't know, like, exactly if it's, like, a little bit of a different deviation from the original Dracula, or, like, an older version, because it seemed to be, like, related to, like, German folktale, and Romanian folktale more so. But I thought it was cool. It was definitely darker than I expected it to be. And its vibe was very, like, cold. I liked the color palette. Everything felt very, like, melancholy, I think is the best way to describe it. Like, the whole movie was just, like, very melancholic. And it looked amazing. Willem Dafoe was in it.
I was gonna
and I
say,
love Willem
yeah,
Dafoe.
One of your oh, yeah. lifetime crushes. I mean,
I
everyone
him.
In this room,
He's
I
not
think.
Even a crush. It's more than a crush. It's more than a
one
love.
Of your twin flames.
I love that guy,
multiple
man.
Twin flames.
I love that guy, dude.
I heard this quote about how Willem Dafoe learned that he was unique looking. He was on a train or a bus or something and heard somebody talking about him. And the dude was like, that's got to be him. Nobody looks like that motherfucker.
A callback to this later. I
love
think.
Him.
Oh, good.
About character actors. Stay tuned.
Anyway, Nosferatu. Beautiful movie. I liked some of the gore. I liked the darkness. I liked the plague angle that kind of worked its way
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which probably is a pandemic kind of like deal.
Yeah. You know me. I'm not a big like dramatic period piece guy. And so that takes me out of stuff sometimes. But
I am, but I'm
not.
That's
my own problem.
Yeah, I like period pieces. I don't like blockbuster movies. And I feel like
you're
it was
so cool.
No, I'm not.
So cool and
I
indie.
I liked their first album better.
I liked it when they used to play in small clubs.
Yeah. I saw them in my shoe in 1997 or something.
Oh, I played in your shoe. Anyway, fuck all that shit. What are we reviewing this evening?
We're reviewing a movie from 1990, not to be confused. Okay, so this movie's called Mirror Mirror. It came out in 1990, but there is a Disney movie from 2012 called Mirror Mirror.
Which just, is fire. It's
is it?
Disney
no,
movie.
I doubt. Well, okay. Anyway, Mirror Mirror, 1990.
Heck yeah. Got a 90s film. I love digging around in the 90s because I feel like it was kind of a decade that was a bit weak when it comes to horror, although there were some pretty goddamn amazing movies that came out in the 90s. But in terms of like finding gems and underrated stuff from the 90s, it seems to be a little bit harder than other decades. So we're starting a bit of a streak here because the last film that we all reviewed together was Body Melt, which was 1993.
Hell yeah.
So now we got one from 1990. It's kind of fun to like hit up this 90s shit. Do you want to kick us off with a little recap of what this son's a bitch about?
Okay, yeah. So Mirror Mirror starts with a room. There's some old photos of sisters and then a good old stab and drag. And so we know we're in for something good. Then we cut to a mom and her daughter, and they're from Beverly Hills, extremely from Beverly Hills. And they're moving into this old mansion in Iowa, in like a small town, someplace called Iowa, I don't know, because their husband slash father has died. The mom is Karen Black, played by Karen Black, and the daughter is played by someone named Rainbow Harvest, and their outfits are fucking incredible. So then we know we're in for something great, because the outfits, you know, I read a movie on that. Then I should have liked Nosferatu a little more. So there's some high school, there's a student council campaign, which is like this hot babe with knockers versus this nice girl named Nikki. It becomes clear that Megan, who's the daughter, played by Rainbow Harvest, is too goth for her school, and she's not fitting in, and people are making fun of her. And the mean girls actually are pretty Heathers-esque, which we can talk about that. So, you know, the house that Megan and her mom, Susan, who's played by Karen Black, moved into, it came with a bunch of antiques. And so this woman, Emmeline, she's like the local antique lady auctioneer person. She's in charge of sorting and selling all the stuff. She finds a diary. A large mirror was also curiously left behind. Megan finds out the mirror has powers. She gets sensual with it, and then things start happening. It's like her good and bad desires start getting realized through the mirror. There's a dog death, just a, you know, trigger warning, plus that's a plot point. Megan has a nightmare about her dad, complete with some like face ripping. There's failed blowjobs, nosebleeds, bathtub drowning. Nikki, Megan's one defender at school, becomes the hero kind of as Megan gets weirder and weirder. Also, as she like looks more and more normal, she gets weirder and weirder. And we get the mirror's origin story, sister murder story, because the diary has lots of details, so that Emmeline character kind of comes into play. And spoiler alert, it's a demon.
Yeah, demon.
Demon mirror.
And at the end, we get a wish that everything would just go back to how it was, whatever that might mean. And that's kind of a baseline.
Hell yeah. Speaking of going back to how it was, no. I forgot to do the details before we got into the recap.
Mm-mm.
So we'll take a step back. Time doesn't matter. This, as you noted, was released in 1990, which probably means that they were working on it in the 80s, which is why it feels kind of like an 80s movie. Directed by Marina Sargenti. Sargenti?
I would say Sargenti, yeah.
Sargenti. Written by Annette Cascone, Gina Cascone, and Yuri Zeltzer. So we have a strong female presence on the production team here. Starring Rainbow Harvest as Megan Gordon. Rainbow Harvest is her real name. It's not a fake name. Karen Black. You know Karen Black. She was all over the horror landscape. She plays Susan Gordon, Megan's mom. One of my favorite Karen Black movies is Burnt Offerings. Great haunted house movie from the 80s.
She's great and weird and weird and great.
We got Yvonne DiCarlo as Emmeline. She is famous for playing Lily Munster in The Munsters.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Christy Dottillo plays Nikki, and we have William Sanderson as Mr. V's. A lot of other people. I know you are a William Sanderson fan or something like that.
I'm Larry. This is my brother, Daryl, and this is my other brother, Daryl.
Hi, I'm Larry. This is my brother, Daryl. That's my other brother, Daryl.
Yeah, I didn't know what you were talking about when you were trying to tell me that, but now I get it.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we will. It's great.
Director of photography was Robert Brinkman, and the music composer for this film, Jimmy Lifton, who also produced the film and made a cameo as Megan's gross dad, as was alluded to. He also started a record label before this film with Virginia Perfili, who also served as a producer on Mirror Mirror. So they knew each other before this even kicked off.
And I also noticed the other music credit is someone named Scott Campbell, who also started a music label and is some punk guy that was in a band called The Sillies in Detroit.
Punks.
You know, some punk.
Where can you watch this goddamn thing? You can rent it online at quite a few places. Fubo, Cult Picks, Troma Now. Roku, it's actually playing for free on Roku right now with ads, though. Flixhouse, Plex, or you can rent a DVD, a Blu-ray, or if you got a fancy video playing machine, you can get the Ultra 4K restoration, which is probably cool. I can't afford anything like that. We rented the Blu-ray for our screening. Okay, so we got a haunted mirror movie. This is kind of fun. I love haunted mirror movies. It's a subgenre that exists in horror, but there aren't a lot of them out there. Just kind of off the top, we got Oculus from the 2010s at some point, maybe late 2000s. I can't remember when it came out, but that's a great film. There's a movie called Mirrors from 2008 with Kiefer Sutherland, which was originally intended to be a remake of the 2003 South Korean film Into the Mirror. There's a movie called The Broken from 2008 also, which I've never seen. And obviously there are plenty of horror films that use mirrors sometime along the way. I'm thinking Candyman off the top of my head, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Mirror Mirror may have been the first horror film that placed a evil or haunted mirror at the center of a film storyline. I could be wrong, but I don't have an example off the top of my head to disprove that statement. So,
yeah, I don't know, unless there's some like Bloody Mary movie out there or something that
there could be, but yeah, I don't know. This is the first one that I think I've seen or early enough in the timeline that kind of centered the haunted mirror as the key plot element. Okay, let's see. What do we want to talk about here?
We need to talk about Beetlejuice.
Yeah, let's talk about Beetlejuice. Okay, so there's some obvious Beetlejuice parallels in this. Do you want to kick this off? I know this is kind of like the thing you were obsessing about, which I agree with 100%.
But I'm sure everybody in the room feels the same way. The second the Megan character walks in, she is Lydia Deetz.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The fits are like all the same, too. Like, and I checked, too, because I was like, wait a minute. When did Beetlejuice come out? Like, hold up. 2 years prior.
2 years prior. So close that it's almost, it's kind of wild to just go that close. And then even, it's not just the way she looks. It's like the Karen Black character who is amazing. The Catherine O'Hara character in Beetlejuice is also like, although it's a stepmom, she's like, you know, the hats and the, oh, and I'm here and we're from the big city. We're in this small town and we're buying this house in the country and we're renovating. I mean, it's kind of a ripoff. Like, this movie was a lot of fun, but that beginning, you're like, what? Are we doing like dark Beetlejuice? Which
it does feel a bit like a rip at the beginning, but it diverts itself.
It does. It's a different storyline, but the two, well, there are more than those two main characters, but the mother-daughter characters are Lydia Deetz and I can't remember what Catherine O'Hara's character is called.
Oh, shit.
Fuck. Anyway,
I feel like an idiot for forgetting that too.
Anyway, but whatever, it's like, don't matter. She is a very similar, like, oh, I'm here. I mean, she's a lot warmer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of threw me at first.
And obviously there's the supernatural interference that the teen daughter is strongly connected to.
Right, which is a similar, yeah, like you're an adolescent, you're going through hard shit. You're also connected to like the spiritual realm through, yeah, like Lydia sees dead people and Megan fucks a mirror, so.
She yeah. does fuck that mirror,
she
man.
Does. She does.
Sometimes you gotta fuck a mirror. Mm-hmm. Okay, so speaking of Megan, this is the plot point that I kind of wanted to talk about, because I think Megan's character is interesting. And then I also want to talk about Rainbow Harvest, the actor that played Megan. I think these things are both interesting. So, in my opinion, I kind of feel like the Megan character was a bit of a missed opportunity, because the whole time I was like, why is this character the way she is? Like, why is she so goth? We know she's from Beverly Hills.
Why'd you guys move out here? My mom's psychiatrist advised it. Psychiatrist? Sounds very Beverly Hills. Yeah, my mom is very Beverly Hills.
But, like, why does she really dress like that? Like, why is she so shy? What are her interests? Was she, like, a cool scenester in L.A., or is this just, like, her thing? Is this dark persona? Does it have something to do with her dad's passing, which is kind of, like, a big critical key point, but we don't have a lot of information about it. So part of me is like, I wish there was just a smidge more character development there that would have rounded out that character in the film as a whole. But still, like, I guess maybe having it a bit of a mystery is interesting. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, I feel like Megan just kind of had one purpose, and it was to just be like goth girl who's mad. And I don't know, like, I think it would have been more interesting if we had like some more Megan lore, just because also I felt like to a certain extent you were supposed to sympathize with her, or at least like her situation, because everyone was like bullying her. And to be fair, like that's something I wanted to point out. Like these bullies like sucked at their job.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what else to say other than like what type of lame bullying like is this? I was confused too, because I was like, are they really just gonna spend their entire lives antagonizing this one girl? Like, is that really it?
Sure, you guys want to go through with this, huh?
What do you think? We went to all this trouble for nothing?
I just don't see what you have against this girl.
Lighten up. This is a joke, for God's sakes. It's not like we're gonna cover in pig's blood or anything.
Why don't you just leave her alone?
Everybody else thought it was a good idea.
But I guess that's how, like, a lot of movies are, and maybe that's how it was. Like, if you were just, like, randomly different and no one else looked like you, they just had to comment on it all the time. But I was like, aren't you guys bored? And you're also bad at it. Like, your insults suck. They're, like, bad insults. If I were Megan, I would not feel uncomfortable. I'd be, like, confused all of the time, 24/7.
Right, and if she's, like, the fashionable one from Beverly Hills or whatever, yeah, she'd, like, be like, fuck you, well, Iowa people.
As her, I'd be like, why are you guys just laughing at me 10 feet away all the time, 24/7? Like, don't you have anything else going on?
I have a feeling that, like, goth in 1990 in Beverly Hills was, also like, didn't probably, go over.
I guess, but it's just, like, so bizarre to me.
So
like,
maybe she was a weirdo before and then her dad. I don't know, like, either. You're right, though. It needed more, right?
Yeah, because yeah, I felt like I was like, where is Megan? She's so fleshed out. Like, she basically, the only time she's on screen is to, like, boink a mirror and, like, touch it. Or, like, she's summoning some power to, like, kill someone and choke them out. Like, that's really all she does in this movie.
She has that moment with her dad before there's like, you know, because his ghost or some manifestation of him comes to visit her in a dream-ish waking dream situation.
Yeah, I think the mirror generated that.
Yeah, yeah, no, he came out of the mirror.
I also wonder how her dad died. I'm like,
that's
did he kill
that's
him
kind of one of the things I was interested in.
I feel like it's just one of those 90s like heart attack dad
he
things.
Died. He
like, it's
old.
Not that important.
Why is his face all decimated?
That's what I'm thinking too. Like, does that allude to like his death?
Oh, or, I didn't think that. I just thought that was the mirror did that to make him grotesque
could
to
be.
Her.
Yeah.
And I thought it was one of those classic like, dad was a rich businessman. He was 65 and he smoked and drank 10 martinis at lunch every day and he had a heart attack. I don't know. That was just shallowly based on what dad looked like and what mom looked like. That's right. What I figured.
Right.
Well, there also is, so the bullying kind of makes sense because the most, like the popular mean girl who's also running for class president, Megan has her eyes on that girl's boyfriend the whole time.
Oh, and he does too.
And he
it's
is
mutual.
Also interested.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of is the catalyst for their beef, but it's also a little understated.
Not initially, though. Like, it's the bullying starts. So, yeah, we should also talk about, what's her face? The nice girl. Not the mean girl, the nice girl. Nikki.
Nikki.
So that was kind of a different character. She is nice and she is supportive. And it doesn't seem like she's doing it just to, like, get brownie points or whatever. She's, like, just a nice person.
Yeah, but it seems like she takes projects up a lot because her boyfriend, who is, like, obsessed with making sandwiches, was saying something like...
That's my favorite thing about him.
He makes sandwiches. Like, she's an incredibly talented... So she's... This is the other thing I'm going to get to that I don't... What... Like, that character has some Veronica from Heathers to it, too. Yeah. You know? Like, she's, like, nice...
Yeah.
Just like Veronica's nice to Martha Dumbtruck or whatever, and she's not interested in the thing the way the rest of them are.
But she's not like outcasted either by any means. Like, no, those neither girls is Veronica are like talking to her.
Yeah.
They're like talking to her and being like, you should be friends with us again instead of that weird goth woman.
But that's what Veronica's. So I'm like, whoever like this, maybe whoever like, I like it. Whoever made this movie. The women that did might have had like a little bit of a Winona Ryder thing going on.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's like safe to say that they were like, we watched Heathers 100 times. We watched Beetlejuice 54 times.
Yeah, it's like Beetlejuice, but focused on high school instead of like.
Yeah, yeah. And
ghosts, I guess.
Yeah.
I have a quote about that somewhere that I think I'll get to in my notes, but I don't remember where it is.
Oh,
so I'll
about
get to
both?
It later.
Or like just the Winona Ryder element?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, okay, for cool, sure. Cool. Yeah, so Nikki, good point on that. She almost felt like more of a main character than Megan to some
by
extent.
By the end.
Yeah.
She definitely was like probably the like main character in the movie.
It's
she becomes the hero.
Switch.
Yeah.
And then obviously her boyfriend Ron, who's only obsessed with banging and eating, which I think is funny. But he also thinks Megan is a weirdo and a whack job.
Oh, yeah.
So.
He's like, this is contagious. I have to leave.
I told you, she is whacked. She thinks that she's like a lead in the heart like, or something.
Say
it's
goodbye.
I'm just like, that's what I'm so confused about. I'm like, okay, like, are people really this fucking mean or like that weird about shit?
Or is it dumb dialogue?
Yeah.
Or is it like what the 90s or 80s depiction of high school, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, I'm just like, I know Megan's killing people, but these people seem to like just really have like a problem with like basically everything. Like, it's very like gag me with a spoon. That's really the vibe the entire time.
I mean, you didn't go to high school in the suburbs.
No, that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, is this really the vibe? Like, they're so bored.
Probably.
I have to say, as someone who did go to a suburban high school in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, this was the vibe.
Yeah, kind of.
Wow, people must be so boring. Like, damn.
No, they are. And they, I mean, imagine if you live somewhere, and I'm sorry, shout out to Grapevine, Texas, that if you live somewhere where A, you had to get in your car to do everything, and B, that everything to do was like the same chain.
Yeah.
You know, and
doing drugs. And
but like chain restaurants and stores. So like everyone basically is the same just because the availability of different is. I didn't mean to make this a meditation on the suburbs. But yeah, I think this is an over the top, but not totally inaccurate depiction of high school in quotation marks in this era.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not this old, but I'm.
Because people get like bullied, but the way people get bullied at like my high school is you just get your ass beat. Like, it wasn't really like, hey, we don't like your pants or your vibe. It was more like, I'm going to beat you up because I want to and I feel like it. That was really the vibe.
There was no beating up in this movie.
No, they
that's
were
what
just
I'm
mean.
Saying.
Like, a staple of like high school bully movies, but whatever. Yeah. Before we get into Rainbow Harvest, I also wanted to note the strained relationship between Megan and her mom, which I think is interesting. So her mom, played by Karen Black, who is a little understated in this movie. She can be really campy in a lot of the films she is in, but kind of dialed it back for this. She is obviously distracted because of her husband's passing and Megan's father's passing. She immediately is taken with a veterinarian named Mr. V's.
That's what,
and
Sanderson.
That guy is in True Blood.
Yes,
and
he's in everything. That's who I'm talking about.
That, and I was like, hold up,
he's
I know this mug.
He's no, he is. Oh, okay. This is where can I insert it here?
Yeah, you can insert.
I'm gonna insert
you want.
It here. So William Sanderson. Oops, I slapped the mic again. Who? So I've always really loved because I watched Newhart with my parents as a kid. And that show is actually fucking funny. Cody and I watched a clip from it. But he's a character actor. He's been in all kinds of things. Yeah, True Blood, Deadwood, a lot of HBO shows. Mm-hmm. But he's a retired actor. And he actually wrote a book. And it is called Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor.
Aww.
Which I was like, that's, I kind of want to read it, actually. I feel like, so yes, he's that guy where you're like, that guy is from, and he's from a lot of good stuff, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's pretty weirdly funny.
He is.
And he's funny in this, too.
He has the same accent in every single movie he plays. It's kind of his vibe.
I didn't look that up. I don't know where he's from, but it feels very Midwest.
No, it is. Like, even in True Blood, he like sounds like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the sheriff in True Blood, if you guys were curious.
Oh,
yeah, he's an interesting character. Small character in this movie, but is quite fascinating. Vietnam vet. Has an interesting hallucinatory experience with the mirror that he chalks up to flashbacks, but it's fascinating. And he's kind of the focus of Karen Black's character until she realizes that there's something pretty dark going on with her daughter, Megan. And at this point, her character actually kind of starts to try to rebuild the relationship, although by the time that happens, everything has kind of gone to shit. But it is really kind of an interesting character arc there between the mother and the daughter. I read one review from one of my favorite reviewers, Anton Patel, who draws a comparison between this film's mother-daughter relationship and Snow White, which makes sense considering the title, Mirror, Mirror.
Mm.
And I'm not a big fairy tale expert, but did you see any other comparisons between this and Snow White? I didn't think there was much from my initial viewing, but I'm just curious if there was anything deeper there. Because it's like, it's about a mirror, it's called Mirror, Mirror, but I was like, is there any more purposeful connections to Snow White as a fairy tale?
I don't know, just because I feel like the whole point of Snow White is that her stepmom wants to, like, kill her, like, ice her out completely. And, like, the focal point is kind of beauty in that fairy tale. And there's like some moments with the mirror where Megan's like looking at the mirror and she's like, you're ugly, I hate you. But like her mom isn't weirdly obsessed with her beauty or like obsessed with her in like a weird way. I feel like her mom is just kind of grieving her dad and then also like, well, her husband, I mean, but and also just trying to like move on and figure out what to do.
But she is a weird, like, Beverly Hills hottie or whatever. And her daughter's a weirdo. So there is, yeah, I don't know. She does, though. It is cool how at the end she's like, I just want to help my daughter. Like, yeah, she's been focused on, like, herself. But she's actually kind of a good mom. She's like, oh, shit, my kid's in trouble.
Yeah.
That's my number one.
Yeah, cued him way too late. She'd already, like, mutilated, like, three teenagers by that point. Like, every single teenager was nice to her, especially.
Yeah.
Okay, let's circle back to Rainbow Harvest really quick, because I think this is an interesting actress. Obviously, if you look up anything about her, one of the first things that comes up is, oh, this is Winona Ryder's doppelganger. Like, everyone kind of, like, points that out. But her bio on IMDb states that little known is about this lovely actress who appeared in films from the mid-1980s to the early 1990s. But after a little digging, I found out that she did work behind the camera a little bit in the film industry, but then decided to dip out and ended up getting a master's in science in management and organizational behavior, and apparently works for an elevator company.
She has two master's degrees, though, too. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just done with it, I guess.
Yeah, good for her.
So kind of a mystery. I tried to do some digging, didn't find out too much, but it is kind of cool when you have like a mysterious actress that nobody knows a lot about.
But yeah, I mean, I guess, she just chose to not like be on social media and just, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously we mentioned that this has a strong female presence in the production department. And I'm assuming, obviously, some strong feminist themes. I wanted to kick off this next kind of discussion point with a cool quote I read from Bloody Disgusting that says, Mirror, Mirror is deserving of its status as a hidden gem. Marina Sargenti's first feature boasts a predominantly female main cast with a film crew to match. and it combines the female gothic with classic teen horror elements, which I think is a cool description. Do you think there's any other specific key details worth mentioning that keys into that concept of feminism?
I mean, I don't know if it, like, is really at its core, like, projecting, like, feminist ideals, but I think, like, in and of itself, just having a movie in the 90s that's, like, directed by women, written by women, and focused on women, and, like, having those women have some, like, level of character development, too, like, especially with the mom, like, is in and of itself, like, feminist, I guess, but I don't really know if, like, it's, like, a feminism, I can't even talk, feminine, like, if it's, like, driven by that, you know, like, if it's at its core about, like, women. I think it's just about, like, teenage trauma in general.
Yeah.
But I think movies where women are just people are inherently feminist, unfortunately. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, that's, it kind of just feels, like, wrong, because it's, like, just by it being a female-focused film, it is, in a way.
It passes the Bechdel test. And also, something I think, while we're talking about this, we haven't really talked about too much, and it's probably my fault because my summary glossed over it, but the initial story about the two sisters and the mirror is pretty central, too. I just didn't want to, like, fucking totally spoil it. And it's not focused on a lot in the movie, but, yeah, it starts about women, and it ends about women, and it...
And all the male characters are kind of doofuses. Like, there's no real strong male character in this. They're all kind of, like, bumbling side characters, dinguses. Which I think is interesting for a teen movie, because usually they're like, yeah, we're the center, and, like, we're the heroes or whatever, and there really aren't any of them in this.
No, they're in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Yeah, cooking. And yeah, even, the vet character that William Sanderson plays is, like, a nice guy trying to be nice. Yeah, interest. Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, feminist movie by default, but also by origin, by...
Somebody just got shot.
We got gunshots, or maybe it's like celebratory fireworks, which I really doubt.
Oh,
I hope that's not happening.
Yeah. All right, so I want to get into some production notes really quick. Feel free to butt in if anything's interesting or you want to comment so I don't just go rambling on, but... I watched the Blu-ray special features with the producers, which I usually don't do with these because I'm either too lazy or I don't have time. But I did watch these, and I thought there were some interesting things. So, as I noted, Jimmy Lifton, one of the producers, he was a musician in the 70s and 80s, had a hit with a cover song by Steve Winwood and the Spencer Davis Group called I'm a Man, speaking of feminism. Anyways, so Jimmy Lifton ultimately teamed up with Virginia Perfili, as I had also noted, and they put together a record company who started doing music videos back in the day when nobody was really making music videos yet. So they were just like, how do you make music videos? Because no one was doing it. It wasn't an art yet. MTV had kind of just started. Wow. And then at some point they were like, we should just make a movie. And this movie was Mirror, Mirror.
Whoa, that's, yeah.
So, interesting note, the real estate agent at the start of the movie is named Mrs. Perfili.
Oh, so, interesting. So that's
character connection with one of the producers. Jimmy Lifton, who did all the music for this film, originally said that he just wanted to have, like, wall-to-wall, back-to-back, nonstop music all through the thing. And then the director was like, no, fuck that. You can't do that. that's not allowed. Which is probably a good idea. But also, according to the producers, the Mirror Mirror curse is real. So apparently, many of the crew members and stars had something terrible happen to them during the making of this. There was somebody who suffered broken blood vessels in their eye. Somebody broke an ankle. There was all sorts of mishaps. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, independent film production with a bunch of people that have never made a full-length feature, maybe they were just incompetent.
And they shouldn't have fucked that mirror.
Yeah, they shouldn't have fucked
the
mirror.
Shouldn't have rubbed all up on that bloody mirror.
Who is doing fireworks today? Maybe it's... These are Martin Luther King fireworks.
You can believe whatever you want.
And Dr. King's honor.
We do live in Oregon, which is not just a liberal
place. Oregon.
Another note, even though this was an independent release, it was actually fourth at the box office when it came out. And the investors made all their money back and then some, which is pretty good for a small movie that only played at like some regional cinemas and
it
whatnot.
It premiered at Cannes too. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it had a premiere at Cannes, which I was like, what? Anyway.
Also, Mark Ruffalo read for one of the parts in this, didn't get the part, but he went on to star in Mirror Mirror 2. Here's an interesting note that I didn't know when we watched this. There are four films in this franchise.
It's wild.
Four Mirror Mirror films. So we got some work to do.
I think when I told Bob we were going to watch this, he was like, oh, I just watched Mirror Mirror whatever numbers last week. I'm like, what?
That's random.
Yeah.
The sound design is really interesting. There's this one scene in the lunchroom where all the sounds get like really psychedelic and it just goes on forever.
A lot of weird sounds.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Okay, let's talk about some of the death scenes, which is my expertise in any horror film because they're my favorite parts.
This one had some good ones. Here you go.
Yeah, here's an interesting detail before we get into it. There was supposed to be a scene where one of the girls has their throat slit. However, Nicole Brown Simpson had just been murdered, so someone in the industry put a stop to that. So we didn't get that one. But there were plenty of other fun stuff in this film. Any that you want to call out in particular?
Well, now I want that throat slit back. No, I'm just kidding. Buggy, favorite death scene? Put you on the spot.
Or just like gore in general. Because there's a lot of gore, maybe not necessarily related to the deaths, but there's some, you know, epic nosebleeds.
That was nasty. I was kind of like, is her like, all of her blood just going to drain through her nose? What's the vibe? I would say I like the garbage disposal.
Mm-hmm.
That one was pretty.
Because it let you hang. It was like, nope, not happening. Oh, shit, it's happening.
And like Clayface. That was fun.
The rip or the, no. Oh, okay, yeah.
Whatever, Ron Sandwich Boy.
The bathtub.
Yeah.
That was actually, because it was kind of prolonged and kind of, yeah.
Well, there was like a cool part to like after it that kind of freaked me out where like Nikki like went into the bathroom and then like the like thing that fucked up, you know, her boyfriend was like standing right.
Yeah. There were two Nikkies.
It was two Nikkies and they were like staring at each other.
That scene was super intense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the same scene, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's lots of like fun, silly shit in this movie, but that was kind of actually not scary, but like adjacent.
It was effective.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'd freak the fuck out if there was a doppelganger who just drowned my boyfriend. I'd be like, oh, okay, gotta go.
It wasn't me, but it was.
The main high school mean girl gets melted by a steaming pipe in the shower room.
Oh, yeah. Which we were talking about that. Like, this death by steam seems like it might be harder to pull off than movies make it look, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, it was really uncomfortable for the actress because not just the filming, but the makeup and prosthetics and whatnot were like pretty intense. And so she kind of went through the ringer. That actress, played by Charlie Spradling, was also in The Blob.
Oh, okay.
Wild at Heart. One episode of Twin Peaks and Puppet Master 2. So she's got a little bit of horror work under her belt.
She must have been in high school in Twin, because she did look kind of familiar. And I want to say about, like, I was making jokes about like her boobs, but it's because the movie did that. Like, the movie made it very clear, like, she's running for student council president because of her tits or what. You know, like the posters were like, here's her boobs.
No, like all of Nikki's comebacks were about her boobs. She was like, oh, is your big plan not to wear a bra?
Yeah. And it was, though, so.
Look, you are going to be a great president. Everybody knows that. A great little president. Great dictator. What has Charlene got? Nothing. She's got nice knockers, and that's it.
Don't look at her boobs. Nikki.
I saw your posters. They're cute.
And I saw yours, Charlene. They're big.
Kim is handling everything.
Oh, how nice. What's next, Kim? Billboards all over town? No, that won't be necessary. I have a much better idea.
What idea is that?
You're not going to wear a bra from now on.
She had nice boobs. I'd vote
for
her.
Nice big boobs.
She got my vote.
Yeah.
And obviously, since this is, you know, made in the 80s, came out in the 90s, it was all practical effects. There's a really cool scene of, like, blood pouring out of the haunted mirror that they actually had to rig up and figure out how to do practically, which is pretty sweet. But, yeah, some great gore shit. In terms of analysis, anything else you want to cover, or do you want to get into our thoughts and our feelings?
I think I said everything that I have on my child.
I don't know. I think I pretty much talked my shit. I talked about what I wanted to say.
Have you heard of Iowa?
Is that the corn place or the potato place?
It's the corn place. I know. That's what happens to me, too. Yeah. Idaho versus Iowa. So I think we're good. We know which one's which.
Okay. Wait, which one is which?
Idaho's next door. Iowa's across the country.
Potatoes or corn?
Idaho potato, Iowa corn. Cordy is like, nope, this is not what we're here to talk about. I just want to make sure we covered it. Geography is important.
I guess so. I never learned it. Never went to high school.
They didn't teach me.
Yeah. I know we had a special club for it.
There was Passport Club, but you could cheat super easily in Passport Club.
Okay, this was your movie, Beth.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first and your thoughts about what you feel about it?
It was so fucking fun. And we just like needed a fun one right now, I feel like. And it was like a delight. It was stupid and fun, but also smart. It was, the dialogue was ridiculous. The outfits were great. Yeah, I just thought it was kind of one of those ones where you're like, it's creative enough. Where you're like, what the fuck? Who thought of this? But also just like, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. That's not a critical analysis. But the Beetlejuice stuff was a little, I felt a little bit like you can't just rip Beetlejuice like that. But then I came around.
Yeah. How about you?
Okay. So I had to move closer. I treaded too far from my microphone to vape. But
she's vaping.
I had a vape break.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I felt like this movie was more 80s than 90s because it's so like at the very like top. I don't know how to say it. At the very top of the 90s, the tip, whatever.
It tipped the 90s.
It tipped right in. It dipped right in there.
Tip. Just the tip. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, barely. Didn't even count. But I thought it was fun. It was like a blend of a bunch of different other like high school horror related things. There was like references to Carrie. There was like, it was like a fun, full of trope movie, and I love a good tropey movie. I'm big into them. It wasn't scary or anything, but it had like some fun moments. And yeah, I like to point out the shot they did with the blood and like the mirror looking at people, I thought was really cool. And I was thinking about like, I wonder if they've set up like some sort of plastic and like had her just like touch it and had the camera behind it. Like I thought about that for a while. I thought that the film quality was kind of shit. And that, like on Tubi.
Blu-ray, so that would be different.
Because that kind of also made it, like the sound quality and like the film quality were like a little less, like it just kind of felt dull. And I wasn't sure if that was like intentional or if it wasn't supposed to be like blurry and kind of dull. Because there was like some moments too during the film where like random spots just appeared. And I was like, whoa, like is this the vibe or like what's going on? Is this part of the film? So that kind of like impacted my viewing experience. But I'll never say no to like a corny high school film where there's some like evil woman in it. It's a big fave of mine. So
hell yeah. That's why I was going to re-rent the Blu-ray for you, because I was worried that the transfers online were going to maybe be shit like that.
You guys were right.
So Blu-ray looks pretty cool. The photography was effective on the Blu-ray.
So. Cinematography.
I don't know. So here's the thing. I have seen this before.
Oh.
But I think I watched it when I was like, I got home from the bar or something and I had a stack of movies and I probably put it on and wasn't paying attention or was like cooking dinner or fell asleep, because I was like, oh shit, I feel like this is a movie that I don't like, but I also don't remember anything about it. So let's give it another go because maybe I'll like it this time. And I got to say, I did. I did like it this time. I liked that there was like actually a demon in the mirror and it wasn't just a vaguely haunted mirror. And I also felt like it was compelling to know that the mirror kind of had influence over Megan's life. And the film begins to play out like a slasher as it goes on, but no one's actually doing any slashing. It's yeah. like the mirror's supernatural powers are doing everything. And I thought that was a cool element of it. I also wonder if films like Final Destination took some influence from this. And obviously, Mike Flanagan's Oculus had to have been inspired to it to some extent, but it's been a while since I've seen that film, and I really like it. I kind of want to go back and watch it just to see if I can find any inspiration there. That article by Anton Battelle that I noted earlier makes an interesting point in reference to past horror work from both Karen Black and Yvonne DiCarlo. And the article also notes that Megan is possessed not just by an age-old entity, but also by the recent past performances of Winona Ryder. Taking the sociopathic high school satire of Veronica from Michael Lehrman's Heathers
yep.
and the hard goth costumery. Is that the right word? Costumery?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hard goth costumery and occult experimentation of Lydia from Tim Burton's Beetlejuice. So, yeah, definitely that, but apparently, there's some Pet Cemetery references in this movie.
Hmm.
And ultimately, I really enjoyed that the movie takes some clear influence from past horror films, but I also think it sits in a place where it's underseen and underrated, but likely has influenced some future horror films,
mm-hmm.
but just nobody really talks about it. So I thought that's cool. But ultimately, I think I would completely understand if someone watching this was turned off by kind of the some of the dated 80s aesthetics or some of the cheesy jokes or, you know, some of the acting is a bit uneven, I would say. But I just thought there was a nice balance between the campy high school dynamics, the gore, the technical aspects of the film, like the lighting and the practical effects, which unfortunately didn't come through on the transfer that you watched, Buggy. But the score is pretty cool. And I just feel like it feels like a horror-ass horror movie. Like, you know, back in the day when you're just like, I want like a fun B horror film.
Mm-hmm.
It hit like all of those notes for me. So,
yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. Let's do a quick obscurity rating on this Son of Gun. So, IMDb votes 2,400. IMDb critics 29. Rotten Tomatoes reviews 4. It's available and streaming at 7 places. All in all, a 5.5. So, I think maybe not the most obscure movie, but I just think the general horror public haven't seen it, maybe, unless you're like a huge nerd.
Right.
So, I think it's still there to be uncovered for some people. Okay, do you want to do the thing that we do?
Let's do
it. I'm scared.
All right.
Don't be scared. Just close your eyes.
Close your eyes, pee your pants, do a little dance, and on the count of 3, we will do our vote. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, hey.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have 3 thumbs up. I wonder if some people are going to get mad about this because they're going to be like, this movie's cheesy and shitty, but I think it's
fun. But that's a gem. That's what makes a gem. Not
it's
always.
It's complicated. I feel like the way that we rate gems is kind of like dependent. Because, like, are we supposed to be rating on scary factor or on, like, how much we like it and if we would, like, recommend it to people?
The gem lies in your heart.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a, it's not something you can define. There's no, it's a rating rubric.
Yeah.
No, there isn't. It's all our gut reactions.
Yeah.
Okay, that's that. We found a gem. It was fun. Check it out. Get your popcorn. I think it's worth a watch.
Yep. Anybody have anything else to say?
Yeah, I have an exciting note.
Yeah.
I have selected my movie for the next episode.
Ooh.
And I'm also excited to announce that we will be continuing our exploration of 90s films.
Okay.
We'll be watching a little film called Kolobos. K-O-L-O-B-O-S, if you don't know how to spell that. It's from 1999. It'll be a rewatch for me, but it's been a million years since I've seen it. So I'm excited to check it out again. I won't ruin anything by telling you what type of movie it is, but you'll just have to wait for that. You can check it out on a few places online, like Fandor, Screambox, Amazon Prime, Arrow, Apple TV, if you want to get out ahead of our next episode. That's a little bit of help for you. Finally, it's 2025. I think we should have some New Year's resolutions. I want to do some promotion this year.
Okay.
But nothing like Elon Musk Twitter bot shit.
Okay.
I kind of want to do all DIY word of mouth shit and posters, stickers, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you have a friend that likes horror movies and they haven't listened to us, tell them to listen to us. And guests. You guys got anything to close it out?
Yeah, guests are good.
Guests would be fun.
I think the dog's New Year's resolution is he was on the couch quiet for this entire episode.
That's true. We didn't get one dirt dog bark the whole time.
So the dog might have died. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. The dog died in this movie. I don't know what announcements I have, except by the time you hear this, Cody will be done with radiation.
Yeah! Hell yeah!
Again, nobody cares about that. David Lynch died.
Yes, he did.
I don't matter.
And together, we're going to get through everything that's happening right now. And if anyone needs somewhere to stay, we got a room.
But you want to vet you. Stay with us.
We're going to vet you. We'll vet you.
Yeah.
Come here. Come stay for the weekend.
Come here, you know. Yeah.
All right.
We won't touch you or bite you or anything.
No.
Or gently. Do you have anything to say?
She's gently stoned. Touch them. I'm not stoned. I'm actually like sober.
I'm on pills.
I know.
I guess for me, like, I don't know if it's like a gem hunt resolution.
Yeah, what's your resolution, bitch?
I hope like for gem hunt, I can find like a really good movie this year that I like watch all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hope to stop vaping, but I don't know if stop that vaping. Will
I support
happen.
That.
Yeah. Thank Wouldn't you watch this movie again though? This one tonight?
Try the toothpicks.
I would. But I want to find a movie where I'm like, this is one of the best movies ever. And I want everyone to watch it. So that's my goal.
I don't know if we've had one of those yet, really.
I'm going to find one. That's my goal.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have we had one that anyone wants to watch again?
Body Melt. I'd watch Body Melt again.
Yes, Body Melt might be top contender.
My favorite. Mm-hmm.
All right, I got to piss my pants.
All right, he's going to go piss his pants.
Good night, everybody.
Good luck. Good luck. We'll help you if you need help.
Rest in peace, David Lynch.
Yes.
Take it easy.
Dirt dogs on a gem hunt. We'll be right back.